When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much by going to airbnb.co.uk/host.
Bewitch the mind.
Fear is the mind killer.
There'll be no foolish wand waving or silly incantations in this class.
No foolish.
Can we be quite quick?
Yeah. Mr. Cargill, I'm going to come to three. There'll not be a four.
Bottle fame, brew glory, and even put a stopper in death.
Mr. Takagi will not be joining us for the rest of his life.
Miss him. What's like a good actor?
And it's like,
people will think you're up to something.
He takes so long to say the line. I was a little late this morning because being the old man that I am, not only did I miss my stop on the tube, I missed my stop on the tube because I was doing the crossword in a book with a pen.
Just imagining you with spectacles at the end of your nose, fumbling over a broadsheet. briefcase.
People who try to read broadsheet newspapers on the tube are from a different period, and I always respect them because they fold out the Financial Times, flip it over,
and once you've opened that thing up, you'll never fold in the same crease again.
Never.
That's it.
And the ink on your hands from reading those things for it's more than 5 minutes. The tube. You're breathing in the tube, will kill you. But my goodness.
Pollution is the worst in the underground. Air quality in London is worse. You're telling underground.
Of course it is.
Really
that
bad.
Unventilated, you know, uncleaned
the
area.
Exhausts from somewhere.
It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. But also, I do feel like it's a kind of modern thing to be quite analog and go back to things.
Take
my eyes off of the screen and open up a book. Sometimes it's a Sudoku book, sometimes it's a crossword. It's a very recent thing I've done, but it helps me just...
Ironically, I think millennials and Gen Z are actually a bit better at distancing themselves and regulating their screen time than I think Gen X and boomers are because we understand how this technology works a lot better. We're a lot more privy to the fact that these things are causing like undiagnosed ADHD attention disorders, making us feeling a little bit depressed, a little bit dopamine depleted.
Oh, that's what it is.
Whereas the older generation, I don't think get that same self-regulation from the tech. We've been very addicted to it. We've grown up with it. Whereas it's just been like placed onto them as fully formed adults. Like my parents are quite bad at like putting the phone away and not having it face up on the table. And I don't think anyone's phone should make any noise.
I agree.
Now, if your phone rings, I'm like, what possible emergency does your phone... Like, text noises, totally unacceptable.
My phone's been on silent since 2012.
Literally, I do not take it on silent. I would consider it so rude to have a phone ring anywhere, let alone cinema. Wouldn't ever think... Like, I get a little vibration on my watch or even in my pocket. No one else needs to know that I've got a text. There's very few things that are an emergency.
I can't believe and can't understand why people have news alerts on their phone
that's
as
the
well.
Worst.
The number one thing you need to do to save your mental health, all people who work in Silicon Valley say this, is turn off your notifications. The only notifications you should be having are your contact ones, like WhatsApp or text. And phone. That's it.
And then even then, you should be conscious of how many unnecessary group chats you're in and probably mute that depending on what you're doing. My parents don't know to do that. They'll be like, I'm in six WhatsApp groups. That's just texts.
You need to make sure you're not on... Emails don't have notifications on your screen, but like you'll be sat at a table or something, they'll get a buzz, they'll look at their phone, and it's some minor news story being like, this minor bit of legislation has been kicked back to the House of Commons or whatever. And
X number of people died in this city you've never been to.
Terrible tragedy.
Yeah.
That we're not trying to be insincere, but it's like, I don't need an injection of tragedy in that moment. That's why I kind of miss the routine of the 6 o'clock news.
You had to tune in.
You just sit down twice a day. You get your news, and that's it. Yeah. In the morning, you breakfast news, and then you get home 6 o'clock. There's your news. That's all I need. Thank you very much. I don't need a constant drip feed of terror and fear and anxiety.
Not to keep throwing my dad under the bus, but he's on Nextdoor. Do you know about this?
No?
It's like the forum for people in your area posting about things.
Oh,
but it's
no.
obviously all bad news.
Oh,
so
no.
it's dogs getting stolen. It's houses being broken into. And just generally, like, people are complaining about broken roads, crime, mugging, stabbings. And my dad's like, crime's getting really bad. Dogs are getting stolen. I'm like, Dad, crime was always bad. You are just being notified about every single thing that's happening within a 5 kilometer radius, which you would never privy to. Sorry,
guys,
Dad.
Ignorance is bliss.
Anyway.
No, absolutely. Welcome to episode 125 of Pulp Kitchen. Last week, we reviewed Back to Black, the Book of Clarence. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, go and do it. Yeah. We also did a spoiler episode last week of Civil War, and we talked about the Joker 2 trailer. This week, it's going to be a little different.
Long requested return of the editorial episodes.
Yes. We're taking a little break this week from reviewing the film of the week.
Mm.
We're going to be talking about actors.
Mm-hmm.
The best actors who have never won an Oscar. We put out a question on Instagram, got a load of great responses.
Load of responses.
Thank you very much for that.
Plus.
We'll be talking through that and giving our own thoughts on
Reading out your picks as well and comparing them with ours.
Absolutely. But we've been wanting to do this for a while, a couple of questions, people emailing in about actors, and it's nice to do something for a change. So sit back and enjoy a different change. Sorry, I'm not closing you off.
No, sorry. It's worth talking about because the Oscars are great and they shine a light on some great things. But, you know, the famously not giving awards for everyone, we don't always agree. And there are, like, comedy, for example, is famously underrepresented at the Oscars. And so there are some of the great comedy performances of all time.
Yeah.
That you look back and you go, how is this not recognised in the official award ceremony? Totally. But such is the way in which we regard certain genres as more important and worthy of awards. But, you know, we've got to sit here and go, hey, these actors are great.
They deserve it.
So we've got a list of actors. Obviously, this isn't all the actors who haven't won and deserve to win.
No,
these are just a handful of your picks and our picks.
Yes.
For actors we think are sort of, you know, been around and deserve it, or for some reason haven't quite got there, or probably just one great performance away, some great stars aligning, whether it's a great director, great script, great performance, that would be that they're in contention.
There's a lot of good actors who have been good. We often say good in everything, but they've never won everything. So settle back and listen to that, and then we'll do some emails again as normal, and then we'll play some games.
A new one singular game. It's one round of one game because it took me a bit of time to prepare, and this is sort of a pilot, if you will,
to see
if I'll bother to take time to do it in the future.
Okay,
but I think it's good, especially for you audio listeners out there.
Oh, I'm curious
if you audio listeners out there. I'll tease you with it. Stay tuned for the game, the new game at the end of the show. I'm trying to keep the audience retained.
I see. Well, let's get on with the show then. Let's talk about the best actors who have never won an Oscar.
TMZ presents the best actors. I can't believe he's never won.
I thought he was great, but it turns out he never won an Oscar.
Jake Gyllenhaal not nominated again. Jake, any comments on that?
Yeah.
Tom Cruise. Oh, I think it'd be fun to work at a trashy LA.
I think it'd be soul destroying.
It'd be soul destroying, but
you
sort
probably
of like,
don't. You shouldn't have a soul if you go into that kind of
I think there'd be something quite sort of easy and junk food about it. Like, oh my God, Zendaya, Tom Holland split. We gotta look into this. You know, they have those fake office chats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, guys, this is a quick message brought to you in partnership with our friends at Airbnb. So, George, I just got back from a 9-day trip the other day.
Yeah, you do go away a lot.
Sorry, I do know it kind of derails production slightly, but work or otherwise, I do enjoy getting a bit of winter sun.
Mm.
I do enjoy getting out of the sort of dark, wintry London months.
Yes.
And I will be going away again in a few weeks, but with my family. But, you know, I was actually speaking to my older sister about this, and for the last 2 years, she hosts her flat on Airbnb every time she goes away.
Okay.
And it got me thinking, like, why don't I do this? It seems like a really easy thing to do. I actually went to go and check what other flats in my area were going for, and I realized my home was actually worth more than I thought. This just feels like a no-brainer.
So if you were to go away now, you could host your flat on Airbnb, and when you come back, you've made a little bit of extra pocket money.
Yeah, goes towards the next holiday.
Yeah, smart. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you know, I've never hosted on Airbnb, but I have stayed in an Airbnb several times. And there have been a few times when I'm thinking, the host is the same age as me. Why am I not doing what they're doing?
We should be doing this.
Yeah.
It just feels like something that would really fit into my lifestyle. But you guys could find out how much your home is worth by going to airbnb.co.uk/host.
But we're not a muckraking, you know,
No.
Bottom feeding journalistic enterprise. We are a...
Two guys in a room.
Two guys in a room.
Decided they were important enough.
That is the press in 2024. Yep. Okay, guys, so we put out this question on Instagram about the best actors who have never won an Oscar. And we got an overwhelming response. We're so thankful to everyone who bothered to message and give their feedback. And do you know what was really interesting? I'm talking, we had like hundreds of messages, no lie.
Yeah.
We had loads of responses. And what was interesting is seeing the consistency of answers across people's messages. People from all around the world. And so we've gathered them together and aggregated them. And I've got a list of the top 10 names that appeared. So in the order from top to bottom, these are the top 10 most nominated names. By you guys.
Follow us on social media if you don't already.
Starting off, the most mentioned name consistently was Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. An actor we both like.
Yes.
But I do feel like the peak Jake Gyllenhaal deserves an Oscar, Jake Gyllenhaal-essence, was kind of 10 years ago with Nightcrawler, Prisoners.
God, that was 10 years ago now, wasn't
Enemy,
it?
Yeah, that era. And now we're in Prisoners. The Ambulance, Roadhouse era of Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah. Still very good, very committed performer.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if that's kind of passed by. But anyway, Jake Gyllenhaal.
I totally agree with you. And I think Jake Gyllenhaal's still a draw for me if he's turning up in a film. And he's always... But even in Southport, he's very good in that film. And the film's kind of like solid. I wouldn't call it one of his great performances. But Jake Gyllenhaal, in recent films, I wonder if there's some sort of thing that's happened to him in industry and the kind of roles that he's getting. Because I think of Roadhouse as a slight sort of... I think it's a bit below him, if I'm honest. Like, I don't think he's a bad actor, but when I saw Roadhouse, despite there being other problems with the film, I found Jake Gyllenhaal's character quite boring and very subdued. And given that Roadhouse is quite a fun concept, you've got MMA fighters and creative cinematography sounds on our end, I was almost just like, sure, he's in it and he's there. Can we not? I wonder if he goes up against other really top actors for really great roles and is losing out to Gosling and
Cooper.
He
also did that Guy Ritchie film that like came and went. There's been a couple of Guy Ritchie films that have gone straight onto Amazon, basically. It was called The Covenant. It was set in the Middle East. And he was a soldier. But everyone said that it was called Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, and Jake Gyllenhaal was in that. That's what I mean. I'm like, Jake, where are you? I want when Nightcrawler came out, everyone's like, whoa, Jake Gyllenhaal, the new
physical
era.
Transformation.
The new era of Jake
Gyllenhaal.
Classic
mirror scream shake.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. I noticed your tie changed.
He sits on a bank of great performance. Brokeback Mountain. Donnie Darko. He's been acting for like
Jarhead.
30 years.
He's like doing his early stages of him being good.
Demolition. He's done some interesting stuff. But
Prisoners, he's really, really good in. A little bit emo in there, but great role.
So Jake, I mean, I'd happily have him win an Oscar, but that's an interesting take up there. Next one up, again, one of the most commented names, Amy Adams.
Yeah,
I can't really believe that Amy Adams has never won an Oscar.
Just run you through some of the films that Amy Adams has been in, because she's actually been around for a very long time and she's done lots of different genres.
So she talks about this. She was in Catch Me If You Can in that supporting role.
In a great, really charming role.
Oh, brilliant. And
you would have watched that film, you wouldn't have known that's the Amy Adams we know Amy Adams to be, but you go back and you're like, oh, look, it's Amy Adams being adorable.
Exactly. Who and braces? She got that role, that was in 2002, and she genuinely thought that was going to be her big break, but it wasn't.
Yeah,
it was then like a 5-year dormant period before she got Enchanted and then Doubt.
Enchanted, very successful.
Yes,
film. You see her in things like Talladega Nights, Enchanted. There are obviously other films that she's done. She turns up in Charlie Wilson's War.
Yes.
She's in Doubt with Philip Seymour Hoffman. She's in The Fighter.
Yes, The Fighter. American Hustle.
She's even in Her.
Yes,
that film in a small role. Arrival is one of like the easiest films to recommend if someone hasn't seen Arrival. You haven't seen Arrival?
Watch it.
Go watch Arrival. Don't read it a single thing. And Amy Adams totally delivers the gut punch that film has. Mm. She's brilliant in Nocturnal Animals. One of my favorite films of the last few years.
In the same year as Arrival.
Yeah, she had a great year. She's in Vice.
Oh, yes.
So she acts opposite real heavyweights like Christian Bale and... She's just brilliant.
She's opposite performers who are often doing bigger performances that I'm wondering are drawing the flames away. Yeah, Christian Bale.
I feel like if you're a producer, director, and you're looking for a really strong support, and I don't want to take that she can't do a lead, but someone to really carry a supporting role, you can't go wrong with Amy Adams.
I think, I agree. But if I ever see her in a leading role, I'm like, good, there she is. Yeah. She deserves it. But I think, yes, she is due one. And I do feel like it's just going to take her to be in a good role for the latent cachet to be ignited and go, we're lobbying for Amy Adams.
Yeah, totally.
Another question.
Also, like, she did a bunch of DC Justice League stuff, which fine in, but I feel like post Man of Steel, she was a little bit sort of just making sure this all just carries on as it goes. I can't say she really gets many interesting things
well,
to do.
Well, similarly, the next one of the other most requested names was Michelle Williams. Now, Michelle Williams, a phenomenal actress, but who also turns up in like Venom and Venom 2 in a terrible wig just to be like, I'll get my check now.
Yeah.
But Michelle Williams, you know, Brokeback Mountain, My Week with Marilyn,
Shutter Island,
Manchester by the Sea, fantastic work. And again, someone who's actually been acting for a lot longer than people realise. Mm. She's in some good, great stuff in the late 90s. Terrific performer, but never won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah.
Now, Saoirse Ronan, it's coming. That's the thing. She's young enough that she's got the career ahead, but if you read the films that Saoirse Ronan has been in out loud, you're like, wow, those are some real Oscar contenders, heavy hitters. Little Women,
even back
Brooklyn,
to Atonement, when she was a child. Yeah.
So it's coming. Right. It's like she's the next Meryl Streep, isn't she, really? Glenn Close was another name mentioned a lot. And I think Glenn Close is someone, who's had a very long career. She's almost like the Jonathan Pryce of, the female version of Jonathan Pryce. And they were in a film together in The Wife. But it's like been in loads of roles, been around for ages. But because she hasn't been in like a headline grabby role for a while, people have just kind of moved on. But she's a phenomenal actress.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Totally. I've never seen Fatal Attraction. No, I'm not saying that's her best work, but the Bunny Boiler one.
No,
Michael Douglas, never seen it. I think I would love it if this happened. Time is, a little bit running out, but Harrison Ford.
I know.
Harrison Ford. We spoke, when we talked about Dial of Destiny last year, well, you pretty much talked about it mostly. We were like, can we move him away from doing stuff like this to doing the actual good roles?
Let's get him to run around. Let's get him sitting and talking alongside someone like a Mark Rylance in a deeply knotty and intense psychological thriller.
You need to turn off your notifications, James, so you don't get
interrupted. It's an email. It's an important email.
Absolutely. He needs to be desk bound.
We keep sort of trying to rejuvenate the great IPs that he was in from the 1980s and 90s. Nothing wrong with that. He's making loads of money. But like, let's give him a really knotty, dense drama.
He's also...
I don't need him running on a cowboy on a tuk-tuk around Thailand.
He's also incredibly funny, and like they've started to capture that because they made that show Shrinking, which he's in on Apple TV, right? But if anyone's seen Working Girl or Morning Glory, he's really good in that.
It's Indiana Jones. He's a great comedic foil in Indiana Jones too, and in Star Wars.
I'd love it for him to get his dues, but not that he needs it. He has got a completely accomplished career, but it is mad for someone who is such an iconic actor and it has held such iconic roles.
I think if I'm to think cynically about Harrison Ford, he's probably very much retired, but then every so often someone from Disney says, hey, like, we're going to pay you 9 figures with residuals to come and do this thing. Yeah. We'll give you a very comfortable...
We'll give you a free plane. We love you flying.
In your dressing room, there'll be coconut water and cucumber sandwiches. Yeah. Do you mind? And he's like, sure. How much?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. I'll do that. And then just go back into retirement and chill.
The next one, I think, is a really interesting one because it's a huge, huge figure in the industry. But a lot of people point it out. Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise... is interesting because we've had so many different chapters of the Tom Cruise arc. Tom Cruise we know now is an industry unto himself. He is. He's a machine. He's his own genre. He's the last movie star that can help
Hollywood
a franchise.
Hollywood is like this, and he's just holding the
Hollywood world.
And with his little elevated boots.
You know, he brings the event, massive blockbuster cinema that's kind of archaic now, but look at Top Gun Maverick, look at the Mission Impossible films. Like, that's
still
fantastic.
Delivering.
But let's not forget, Tom Cruise has a massive back catalogue of accomplished work. Rain Man, Born on the 4th of July, Magnolia.
Jerry Maguire. A Few Good Men.
Exactly.
I think if you were to have won for something, I look at Jerry Maguire and I look at A Few Good Men and I go, those are probably the performances when I think about him really going for it.
He has been nominated. He's nominated for Rain Man and Born on the 4th of July, I think.
And then you think like, those films like The Firm. And,
oh, yes. Yeah,
he's a really great, dynamic, young actor. Mm. And you're like, this guy can do everything.
If anyone, you haven't seen Magnolia, have you?
No.
It's a really interesting performance from him because he's basically playing an Andrew Tate character.
And
he is horrible, but he is, he's a very damaged person, but like he's so good in there. And even something like Tropic Thunder. I mean, like I know it's like an extended cameo.
Hilarious.
But what's interesting is that his next film, I think after the next Mission Impossible film is Alejandro Iñárritu's new film. Yeah. Complete different gear change.
Can't wait.
And I'd love for us to have a third act of Tom Cruise that is Art house, interesting movies. Eyes Wide Shut, another Tom Cruise movie, yeah. Right? Let's get back to that. Act one was the interesting, he's trying out different things.
Yeah.
Act two was the solid action years. Yeah. Let's have a different era for Tom Cruise. I would love it if he won an Oscar.
More people should see also A Few Good Men if you haven't.
Oh, yes.
Tom Cruise is acting opposite an amazing cast of Jack Nicholson, yeah. Kiefer Sutherland,
Demi Moore.
Kevin Bacon, Demi Moore. Like, titans of the industry, and he goes toe-to-toe with all of these people. He proves that he's not just like a cheesy, attractive blockbuster guy. Like, this guy can really hold his own. I think it's my favorite non-action Tom Cruise film.
He is an electric cinematic presence. Yeah. You do realize that he represents a certain avenue of cinema that you really enjoy.
Charming, funny, compelling.
Next up is a guy that, you know, again, another... I can't believe that he's not been nominated. Willem Dafoe. Oh, yeah. Willem Dafriend, as they often say.
I think he's too interesting for his own Oscar good.
You think he's too interesting.
He would rather dance around in his pants with Robert Eggers.
But that's the kind of performance nowadays that gets nominated.
Yes, it is.
He got nominated for Poor Things this year. That's an example. Those kind of performances get nominated. I think he was also nominated for the Florida... Have you seen the Florida Project?
Yeah.
And he's
Florida
lovely Project. In that. Completely different character. Yep. So nice, so down to earth. And again, he's been in so many iconic roles. He's in Born on the 4th of July with Tom Cruise, all right, as another veteran. And like, he's just fantastic.
I bet directors
good in everything.
Aren't afraid of presenting him with anything strange.
Yes.
Thinking he'd be thrown by it. Mm. He's probably more compelled to do it, which I just think is brilliant. He's got a really interesting face, interesting voice.
Yeah.
Everything about him is just, even in his most like pop culture centered mode, which was playing the Green Goblin in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, he's terrifying.
Yeah,
he's absolutely terrifying. He's got this skeletal bony face, and the laugh he does makes me think he'd be a perfect Joker if they ever wanted to reboot again.
Oh my God,
William Dafoe Joker? Are you kidding me?
He never phones it in. He is terrific.
No.
Also, I think in his kind of similar vein to Willem Dafoe, a similar age, Samuel L. Jackson, who we talked about
success very late in his life.
Yeah, and when he did Pulp Fiction, he was in his mid to late 40s, I think. I think mid 40s, and he's in his mid 70s now.
Highest grossing actor of all time.
Yes, we said that if we were to watch anyone's filmography, he's a good shout because he's been in so many
Star
different
Wars,
things.
Marvel, and countless others.
Tarantino,
he's the highest grossing actor of all
time. He's a really great. Presence, but it's like an iconic thing. It's Samuel, everyone knows Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
He's been in the lowest B movie straight to DVD schlock. That's lower than Snakes
Background
on a Plane.
Character, yeah.
And he's been in high prestige Tarantino or even stronger epics. And
no one does Fed Up and Pissed Off and at the end of their tether like Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Whether it's Sick of the Snakes on the Plane or Say What Again? Yeah. I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Like he just does it better than everyone.
So he absolutely deserves it. So that was a run through of the top 10 names there. There are plenty others.
Mm.
But before, I will maybe just quickly run through those at the end of the episode. But before we get to them, let's talk about our own personal ones, which have not been mentioned in this list. James, would you like to begin?
So one performer who, like a lot of these performers, I think is really just one great performance away from being right up there in contention to win an Oscar is Viggo Mortensen, who I think has always been great in anything. He's actually been around for a very long time, much longer than I've been aware of him. And I haven't seen all of his films because he does a lot of weird projects and he's done a lot of stuff before basically I discovered him in Lord of the Rings. Uh-huh. He's been nominated 3 times for Captain Fantastic, Eastern Promises, and for Green Book, I think.
Green Book, can I just say?
I think it's a slight bore.
Not just a little bit, like his performance... very entertaining.
Yeah.
A little bit, forget about it. I'm Italian.
Hey, what do you mean? He's black, chicken. It's all right. What
I'm black, that? He's white. I drive the car, he sits in the back. It's a gabagool.
That film was such an example of nominated and many people were like, oh, Green Book, you've got to see it, just beautiful. And then I watched it with Talia and we were like, what?
It's a bit of a primary school lesson on racism. That's what it is. It's entry level. It's
from 20 years ago, like how we think about racism.
There's actually a picture at the Oscars of Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali looking at each other like after the news announcement, being like, can you believe it?
If you think so.
Yeah, sure. We got it.
But nonetheless, that was sort of when he got, when he was in the conversation for being nominated. So he is a real old school cowboy, Wild West style actor. He takes it very seriously. I've listened to so many other actors talk about working with Viggo Mortensen and his process and how softly spoken but fierce, masculine but feminine, and just being everything that makes a great actor who they are. Just to quickly go through, he's done so many films, but just some of the films that he's been in. So the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which I'll get back to, completely put him on the map as an actor. He definitely got offered loads of big franchise-leaving roles after Lord of the Rings, but very clearly turned a lot of them down in favour of more interesting artistic work. He turned up in The Road, which is an adaptation of Cormac McCarthy's book, which is really good, incredibly dour and depressing. Yeah. But Viggo Mortensen completely breaks your heart in that film. He's in films like The Two Faces of January with Oscar Isaac, which I actually think is quite a solid film.
Another Patricia Highsmith story, not Talented Mr. Ripley, but
You got History of Violence, Green Book, which we've already talked about, 13 Lives, which recently came out. And I thought he was, you know, Viggo Mortensen just turns up out of nowhere playing a really solid, down-to-earth. He was taught to dive properly by the guy who he was playing in the film.
That's so interesting, because, I mean, we don't have time to talk about it. We mentioned this before, but similarly, in that movie with Colin Farrell, another actor who's done fantastic work, but it's a credit to both those performances. They just disappear.
He's
playing the sort of biscuit-eating,
shaved head, British custard creams in the back pocket. Just is no nonsense. I get what I get done.
Not enough people saw that film.
Faded surfing t-shirt or diving t-shirt. And he literally learned to dive from the guy who's playing. Must have been such a blessing. I can't recommend 13 Lives enough. It's like a really solid retelling of that story. That's actually very entertaining and really emotionally impactful.
And it doesn't matter that you know what happens in the story. It's incredibly gripping.
And I really put in context for what they did, which is brilliant. Crimes of the Future, which recently came out and I missed. And he's now directing. So he directed one film called Falling. And he's just about to release a new film, which he is directed, starring in. And I think he's scored it as well, called The Dead Don't Hurt, starring Vicky Creeps, who's in The Great Phantom Threat. Yeah. That's a Western that he's got coming out. It debuted at Toronto. I think that's been released somewhere, but in the UK it's coming out in May, which I'll be keen to check out. But in the in my endless trawling through the Lord of the Rings behind the scenes, all the other actors talk about, like, oh, Viggo, working with Viggo, he's such a professional. Fun fact is that he was, they actually recast Aragorn when they'd started production. So they realized the Aragorn they had cast wasn't working.
Do you know who that was?
I don't know who it was. I don't think they're an actor. They recast that role when they were already shooting, and Viggo Mortensen jumps in. And the first day of shooting in Lord of the Rings is the scene where he fights all of the ringwraiths on Weathertop. And he's never had any combat training. He's basically putting on the costume for the first time. He's holding his sword for the first time. And he goes on to do that scene. And he talks about how that when everyone else was having lunch or just walking around or leaving the hotel room, Viggo Mortensen would have his sword at his waist the entire time because he wanted to, like, know the feeling of what it's like to move around a sword. His horse, he bonded with so much that he bought after the end. He's like, I just love this horse. And if you see him in The Two Towers, he's really connected to his horse. He buys the horse because he's Viggo Mortensen. Brilliant English accent. I thought he was English when I was watching the film, but he's perfect. Viggo Mortensen.
I agree. And he has that kind of mercurial quality, and clearly picks his roles very
And there are loads of other films I've not mentioned that he's in. You could go on.
So for me, I think a really interesting example, which came up in people's suggestions, is Jim Carrey. You know, Jim Carrey, who is in a different stage of his career now, he sort of talked about retiring, but he is going to do another Sonic movies. But he's definitely in the kind of, you call me when you want to roll.
We mourned his retirement announcement on his show. We sort of did a eulogy for Jim Carrey.
I think Jim Carrey's a really interesting one. First of all, it's evidence of that kind of unconscious bias against comedic roles, right? Yeah. And it's also that he's a very physical actor. You know, a lot of the roles we often see winning Oscars are very sort of, not straight, but kind of, or at least typically, very traditional, very staid. Whereas, I mean, okay, it's now changing, like Emma Stone, quite a physical performance in Poor Things. But Jim Carrey's whole range is through his physical performance. And I think the reason probably he hasn't been nominated, not even nominated at all, by the way, you know, even though he got plaudits for Man on the Moon, Truman Show, Eternal Sunshine, is that I think his performance style and maybe his, you know, his mania can often alienate people. I mean, yeah. I remember Sacha Baron Cohen saying, because in a round table where they're sat opposite each other, he says, you know, you're one of my idols, but when I first saw you do your stuff, I just almost was like frightened. I couldn't get into it. It scared me. It was like electricity, raw electricity right in front of me.
My parents would be like, how can you find this funny when I was watching it on the film? Oh, if you walk in on it, you're like, what the hell is going on with this?
But it's that thing with Jim Carrey where all of those films that he's in, which are great, would not work without him. They do not work as films. He is the linchpin in it. And the fact that he can do comedy so well, being one of the best comedic performers on film, maybe, you know, of all time, definitely up there, to being a fantastic dramatic performer. And I think we all miss dramatic Jim Carrey. He's done some more dramatic roles that haven't quite landed, the number 23.
Yeah.
But Eternal Sunshine, Truman Show, Man on the Moon, he's a terrific performer. Mm. I'd love it. I know he's in this different phase of his career now, but I would love it if he got a juicy role and came back and kind of got there to not just recognize him, but to recognize a different field of performance type. Mm. He represents a different category of performance altogether that actors do.
It's easy to quickly go, oh, okay, would it be Truman Show that if you were to have won, would it have been that? But I almost go, look at Liar Liar and go, that is a man operating at like the peak of his craft.
Yes.
There's no one else who could do that film the same way, as you've already said. You could go, that is probably an Oscar-worthy comedy performance if there ever was one.
Yes, yes. It's the same with like Robin Williams. Like Robin Williams does fantastic comedy performances. What does he win an Oscar for? Good Will Hunting. Yes. Good performance, good film, don't get me wrong. But he's had to, you know, bring himself down.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey.
Next one I wanted to talk about. I'm going to go for, so I'm going to go for Carey Mulligan.
Yeah.
A really great British actress. She's also actually been around for a while. Mm. And it's just slow. I think her filmography is incredible. I think you could go, an actor that's got a brilliant filmography that you'd very happily dip into and just binge would be the filmography of Carey Mulligan. You know, turns up in an episode of Doctor Who, one of the best episodes of Doctor Who, Blink. I didn't even know it was her until I eventually went back.
Well, it's because it's just pre An Education, which was her break, right?
Totally. So just to quickly run through some of her films. She's in An Education, Never Let Me Go. She's brilliant in that. Drive, Shame, one of my favourite films. The Great Gatsby, Inside Llewyn Davis, Far From the Manning Crowd, Suffragette, Promising Young Woman. Most recently, She Said, Saltburn, Maestro.
Yeah.
Really great, opposite, exceptional talent. I think you could have easily, from her, you know, Far From the Manning Crowd, Pride and Prejudice stuff, you could have gone, oh, she's this typecast, delicate English Rose character, but always done very interesting roles, very challenging roles. And she always delivers, and I'm always excited to see her do something there.
She reminds me of kind of she's a fierce performer. You know, there's a ferocity in a really kind of tight or theatrical kind of way.
Quite no nonsense as well. Yeah. Quite down to earth.
Reminds me of like Glenda Jackson as an old example, but just someone who's just so tight and just so, just fierce in her approach.
Yeah. I don't think she's intimidated by other great talent. I think she's there to do her job. I imagine she's very professional. Yeah.
And also what's nice in that a small role in Saltburn, but she has comedic chops as well.
Which is really great. She really does. Totally.
I would just say actually, because we mentioned him, I haven't actually seen the film, but she was opposite Jake Gyllenhaal in the movie Wild Life, which is directed by Paul Dano, another actor. We could be here all day, but another actor who deserves plaudits and deserves an Oscar. Little Miss Sunshine, There Will Be Blood, even The Batman.
Paul Dano's a very
fantastic. And The Fablemans. Oh, he was so good in that. And I think we talked about Paul Dano before about the kind of, because he's got a similar
voice. He's got the voice.
He's got the voice, but he is a wonderful actor.
He's like erratic but delicate. Mm. He has this fragileness to him, but a real sort of heart. Mm. Paul Dano.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honorable mention.
Can I just jump to the next one? Andy Serkis. Oh, yeah. Andy Serkis.
Good at everything.
First of all, comes across as such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Incredibly talented. Smart. Incredibly gifted. Smart. Thinks about filmmaking at such a high level. Mm. But because he's been so deeply involved, he's done great performances in front of in front of motion capture, but when he's behind the motion capture element, Gollum, King Kong. No, he wasn't King Kong. He was in King Kong, but he wasn't the actual Kong, was he? That was probably Terry Notary.
Oh, I thought he was
Kong?
No, he is Kong. I'm pretty sure, unless Terry Notary was doing other movement work. It's a good question, though. I bet Terry Notary worked on it.
No, Andy Serkis does say here, it was King Kong, yeah, actually.
He's also a speaking part on the boat.
Yes,
the
exactly.
Chef. He's the chef who only tells bad stories.
But his work in motion capture and all of the Rise, Dawn and War of Planet of the Apes is so fantastic and deeply good performances. Mm. For an actor, you do realize you are in a leotard with a camera on your face with the green dots pointed at you, and you have to have such conviction and give the animator something to work with.
Talk about a performance that completely changed Hollywood forever and changed filmmaking forever.
With Gollum. It's that,
there's a before and after moment. Like I think if regardless how good the technology was, the performance hadn't been able to shine through the technology at the time, it wouldn't have had the legs that it's gone on to have as a technology.
And it's strange because, you know, Andy Serkis has when he's playing a human, has recently been in things like that Luther movie that didn't do very well, Black Panther. But I I'd like to have him in human form do really well as an actor. He's so talented. He can play villainous. He can play kind. He's in 13 going on 30. He's her manager at the magazine. And he's really good in that.
Yeah. Andy Serkis, I love seeing him cast in anything. Mm. And like, he really brought the whole Apes trilogy to life with Caesar.
Totally.
The gravitas, like a king. Mm. Brilliant. Can't get enough of Andy Serkis. Last one I want to go for, which is a little bit bittersweet, is Alan Rickman, who sadly left us in 2016. He actually struggled with a lot of different illnesses and had cancer twice in the course of his life. But Alan Rickman, I say this because he spent 12, 13 years of his life being a small part of one of the biggest franchises, which in a lot of ways tied him up to do a lot of other work. And he wanted to direct and write, and he had a lot of these other passions, but he was very much tied to Harry Potter, which I'll get back to. But has this sort of long career and bursts on the film scene as one of the great cinema villains of all time in Die Hard with this deep, deep theatrical voice. And who is John McClane?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just...
So I was literally the other day in the kitchen, I was just, you know, riffing as I do. And I was thinking about when he plays he tries to have an American accent in that. You know, Bill Clay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And just like sinister, and he when he speaks, everyone else... is quiet. He's also in films like Love Actually, Sense and Sensibility, returns as a villain in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. He's in Sweeney Todd. There's a really interesting project he did in 2010 with Emma Thompson called The Song of Lunch, which was a British 2010 television adaptation of Krista Reid's poem of the same name. And have you seen this?
No.
It's like an hour long. It's brilliant. It tells the reunion of two former lovers who meet at a Soho Italian restaurant. And it's kind of like a serene peep show because you have the POV camera that peep show has, but he is narrating everything in his voice. It's like the touch of the Chianti dripping onto the wine. We drink, slowly becoming more palatable. It's brilliant. It's on YouTube. You can watch it. It's just under an hour.
Just adapted from a poem by Christopher Reeve?
Yes.
As in Superman, Christopher Reeve?
No, Christopher Reed poem.
Oh,
Christopher
Reed.
Christopher Reeve. It's like completely sucks you in, and it's a basically poem, but drawn into theatre, and he's acted alongside the great Emma Thompson, who's obviously worked with before. Really interesting. And then on Harry Potter, I think it's one of the best examples. There's no small parts, only small actors.
Yeah.
He is probably the most important character in that story in terms of Harry coming of age, realising that he can't only be doing what adults tell him, he has to also be in service of adults. He famously, after I think two of the films, got a little bit frustrated and wanted to potentially leave the franchise. It was at that point that the only person J.K. Rowling told what was really going to happen with the story and with Snape was to Alan Rickman. She said it's really important. So at one time, Alan Rickman was the only other person outside of J.K. Rowling and maybe her close family who knew the truth. And that really informed his reason to stay onto the series and go on to just basically carry that final ending. And Daniel Radcliffe said some really amazing things about how when he was a kid, he was absolutely terrified of Alan Rickman, who was purposefully nasty to him on set and would just glare at him. The amazing scene when at the first potions class, when he walks in, he's like, I can teach you to bewitch the mind and ensnare the senses. I can tell you how to bottle fame, brew glory, and even put a stopper in death. And he completely captivates the class, and this whole idea that there's magic, but there's also a darker side to magic, a twisted side to magic. And then obviously, like, he talks about Anna Rickman being really supportive of Daniel Radcliffe when he went on to go and do plays, and he was one of the only actors who went to go see him and took him out for lunch afterwards. Brilliant.
I mean, and a huge loss.
Yeah, a huge loss. And I say him because I feel like post Harry Potter, You know, he died sort of in his mid-60s, and I feel like he could have gone on to do some really interesting work. Yeah. He's a really unique voice and a unique presence.
Yeah.
And he's great. I almost feel like there's something else we could have had. We could have got more Alan Rickman.
Yeah, and that's another stage.
And could have definitely won an Oscar.
So I'm just going to run through now some of the other names that people mentioned just quickly, just picking out a couple here and there. Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
Obviously, this year came very close to winning an Oscar with The Holdovers, even though that Cillian Murphy was, you know, leagues ahead. But yeah. Paul Giamatti is interesting because he has been Oscar-worthy. And he's been that kind of actor that if they won an Oscar, you go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. He's been like that for about 20 years.
Yeah.
He's just been hanging around that realm. So this year, when it was like, oh, he's nominated for The Holdovers, I'm like, yeah, because Paul Giamatti's a great actor. That makes complete sense. Yeah. Matt Damon. Why wasn't Matt Damon nominated for The Talented Mr. Ripley? He's fantastic. Why wasn't he nominated for more of his other performances?
Yeah.
He's very, very good. I think people underrated, perhaps because in the Bourne films, he's so sort of tightly wound and sort of expressionless. But I think Matt Damon brings more than people give him credit.
Totally.
He's got good comedic chops as well.
If you want to realize how great him and Ben Affleck still are, go watch The Last Duel and see them like totally handle really tricky subject
matter.
Jean Le Carouge, yes! Welcome, Jean Le Carouge.
Other people, Ralph Fiennes never won, even though fantastic in things. Schindler's List, The Grand Budapest Hotel. Look at those two characters.
Yeah.
Completely miles apart. Yeah. But,
you know. Also not afraid to do like Shakespeare and do Coriolanus with... what's the face?
Jared Tom Butler.
Yeah. Yes, Jared Butler. Yeah.
That was quite a good movie. It wasn't bad.
I didn't see it.
It was all right. Hugh Jackman, Ryan Gosling, Oscar Isaac, Brendan Gleeson, Edward Norton.
Adam Driver. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Ethan Hawke, Adam Sandler.
James McAvoy
was literally the next name I was about to read.
Emily Watson, I feel like, could be one good film away.
Yes.
She's been really
Emily
solid
Watson.
In a load of things.
Totally, totally. Yeah. And actually, like, again, not a sort of a kind of follow-on from when we were talking about Jim Carrey, like, Steve Carell, I'd like him to continue his career to maybe be nominated again. He was nominated for Foxcatcher, and I'd like that because he has been a great comedic actor.
Another great role.
Talk about snubs. I cannot believe Steve Carell never won for The American Office for his performance as Michael Scott.
Yeah.
I mean, when I watched it again recently, I just think he is absolutely fantastic in there. Just does so much work, but it doesn't even get noticed in his own category.
Sure. You know, I think when won Toni Collette.
That was also on my list. Toni Collette. If we had more time, I would have talked about her. Again, an actor that, I mean, when she did Hereditary, a lot of people came out and said, yeah, she's been great for ages. And she has. She's been in so many things in supporting roles. She's done sort of very mainstream sort of average stuff, but she's done it. And more, you know, acerbic indie stuff, but she's always great in it.
Yeah.
She's in About a Boy.
Yeah, yeah.
As his mum. She's very good in that.
Troubled Mother,
Hereditary, she's fantastic.
The young Nicholas Holt.
I really like her. We talked about Stephen Graham, Andrew Scott, Mads Mikkelsen. Mads Mikkelsen.
I mean, a lot of those I'm like, it's coming. Andrew Scott coming.
Andrew Scott, yeah. Particularly
I feel like
the year
Andrew
he's
Scott,
had.
Like sometimes I wonder if people have to sort of you have to warm up to these actors a little bit. Because I think Andrew Scott's had performances very worthy of nomination and he hasn't. And I feel like he just needs to keep by pure attrition doing what he's doing and it will happen. So Same for Adam Driver and Oscar Isaac, I feel like there.
Adam Driver, I think, is just one of the best.
I feel like he would have hoped
around.
Ferrari would have been that film for him, but it just wasn't.
It really was not.
No.
But his performance in Marriage Story is just incredible.
That's probably the closest he's been.
That's it. And that's the thing. I'm like, I want that. With all these actors, you just want them to have that next big role. Like Ethan Hawke is a good example because that mentioned a couple of times. I was like, obviously, I really like Ethan Hawke because I love the Before films.
Yeah.
But I'm like, and Ethan Hawke is doing fairly, you know, good, solid work out there. Mm. But I'm like, I want him to have a big hit that puts him on.
Yes.
He needs to have a moment. Ethan Hawke hasn't had a moment. In 2018, he did quite well with First Reformed, which is a really interesting film where he plays a priest. Right. But like, I'd love to say, I don't think he's close at the moment, but I'd love him to have a moment which brings him close. Training Day, he was nominated. Boyhood, he was nominated. Anyway, we could go on all day.
I think, guys, obviously we've mentioned loads of actors there and there are probably loads more. If you have any actors who you think should... who haven't won an Oscar but probably will very soon or should win an Oscar, please send in your thoughts to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com and we'll give you a little feedback session on this episode.
But that was
in the future.
the best actors who've never won an Oscar.
A good old editorial.
I really enjoy talking about that because it just gets you jazzed up and you're like, I want to go back and watch all the films that I enjoy these actors in and also all the films I haven't seen yet.
And I just want these great actors to be in great films.
Can I just give...
I really want to see James McAvoy give a really great Oscar-winning performance because it would be a good film.
And actually, you know, James McAvoy in Split, that's a really good performance in an otherwise that's a good example of a great performance in a terrible film.
Yeah. We should do another James great McAvoy. Performances in crap films. Yeah.
Anyway, thanks so much, guys, for your input on that. We really appreciate it. Let's read out some emails.
Let's do it. George, should we go through some of the emails that we get sent into the show every single week? As always, if you wanted to say, you never answered my question.
Well, you started speaking. I was like, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear from
you. As always, if you had thoughts, questions, concerns, reviews, statements, musings, reckonings,
philosophizings, as always, hypotheses.
As always, you can send them in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com and we will read them out on the show.
There, I spoke too much for you.
We're out of sync.
Okay, sorry.
Just like David did. David writes in and says, hey, Pop Kitchen, long-time fan here. I've been listening to your podcast since the No Time Left to Die / No Time Left to Die.
No Time to Die.
It was just No Time to
Die. He didn't have any time left to die, but No Time to Die.
Someone was like, drop the left. It's perfect.
That is the early days.
Dune episodes back in 22.
21? That's 2021, that is, mate.
It is 2021, but you said 22.
I didn't.
No.
He said
22.
Oh, sorry.
Get it right. My question is, what are your honest thoughts about The Last Jedi? The internet is very polarized reactions, especially on Reddit, about The Last Jedi, but I personally loved the film. We mentioned this briefly last week in a jokey way. We're talking about, I'd love to have been in the room when they realized.
Oh, yeah.
Very briefly. I think there's a type of, David goes on to say, I think there's a type of maturity that we didn't get to see in The Force Awakens or other Star Wars films. Rian Johnson made a beautiful film about not just dealing with failure and depression, brackets Luke's character arc, but learning from them as well. I understand why fans didn't like Luke's arc, but I don't think fans own a story, so to speak, but that's just me. Anyways, love your podcast and congrats on all your guys' success. Saludos, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. Couple of things. First of all, we have kind of answered this question a few times. And I know James is going to say that The Last Jedi is good movie.
In a vacuum.
In a vacuum. I would just say, I don't think that... I've only seen The Last Jedi once and that was nearly 7 years ago.
Okay.
And I'm always reluctant to go back to it because... I kind of agree with you. In a vacuum, it's fine. As the second movie in a trilogy, and it doesn't work. When you say, "Oh, it's trying all these new things," yeah, I'm happy for a film to do that. Don't do it in the middle. You got to do that in the first film. Kathleen Kennedy was like, they gave him a massive amount of freedom with it, and I'm like, too much. You should have let him have the freedom for the first film.
It's a trilogy here.
It's a trilogy.
We spent a lot of love and care bringing this back.
You can't suddenly start laying tracks for a different direction.
Yeah.
So that's what bothers me about it. All the stuff about like Luke's arc. I think I'm open for a filmmaker to try and do anything. But part of me also sometimes thinks, I don't know if we actually needed that in a Star Wars film. I don't know if that actually works. Well done for trying something new. But like it doesn't. There's nothing about Luke's character in The Last Jedi, from what I remember, that really reminds me of the Luke he once was.
For me, The Last Jedi represents something very irritating and inconsiderate about the treatment of the IP. You've bought the IP, you've rejuvenated it, got fans very excited about The Force Awakens, honored what came before, made a very solid film that balanced a lot of things, a little bit safe, but very enjoyable, and that joy you felt at the cinema was brilliant. The Last Jedi, for me, based on how inconsiderate it is to the films that came before it and what needs to come after it, represents this, I think, slightly ugly side of studio acquisition of IP, which is just make anything for the time it comes out, and these suckers will see it anyway. Huh. And I think that not respecting the sort of core... respect of the story is what winds me up.
Yeah.
Actual play-by-play, there's a couple of like scenes that aren't that fun and some of the dialogue isn't amazing, but there are brilliant Star Wars moments within that which only work in those scenes and don't make sense, especially when you look at the film after it. So it irritates me to think this is a cynical exercise to make money. Just make another Star Wars film with Star Wars on the tin and don't worry, they'll see it anyway. It doesn't have to connect, doesn't have to make sense, doesn't need
also,
to work.
It's also kind of probably a lazy, superficial thing of being like, hey, we've heard about producers being too overbearing with big franchises. We're not going to do that. We're going to let you do what you want with it. We're going to take the hands off. It's like, yeah, but it's, you know, you still need to have a dialogue.
Yeah.
And I don't care. I don't care about fans owning it. We don't care about fans dictating the direction of it. It's, as you just say, it's a mishandling.
And I actually blame the shortcomings of The Rise of Skywalker on the ways in which The Last Jedi laid the foundations. Yeah.
Yeah.
So The Rise of Skywalker is another example of that. And you realize, oh yeah, we'll just make, who can we bring back?
Yeah.
Sidious.
It's the same problems, but in pulled into reverse. So it's, oh God, yeah, panic drive. JJ, come back and let's literally stitch everything back together. No, let's give him the helmet back.
Yeah.
Knights of Ren, we didn't do anything with them. That was mentioned two films ago.
Yeah.
Should we bring that back?
You really disrespect me. You made me so happy
to
bring this back, and I really vouched for you, and I felt heard and seen when episode 7 came out. And I really thought you were doing it properly.
Imagine,
and you just took me out back and shot me.
Imagine going to a restaurant and you get the best starter you've had.
Yeah, the best starter.
It's your favorite childhood restaurant. And they've reopened it. And you're like, oh, the starter. It's bringing everything back. Oh,
I remember this flavor. Oh, my mom used
so
to...
ready for the main. And it's clam chowder from 3 years ago with bits of green
and
in it.
And it's like, not, mate, it doesn't link back to, you had seafood and this is like, Japanese.
Yeah.
No, not Japanese. This is like Mexican.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what it would be.
It just doesn't tie up.
And then the dessert is trying to be like a Mexican
seafood. It's a reference to the starter. Yeah, here we go. Yeah. Oh, no.
Like, what?
This metaphor is incredibly garbled, but you kind of get where we're going with it. Thank you for that email. This next email is from friend of the show, Michael, who writes in to say, hey, gents, Michael here, long time no email.
Hi, Michael.
Thought I'd check in having just seen Monkey Man, the Dev Patel film, which I reviewed a couple of weeks ago. And he was suitably impressed. I love Dev Patel and Jordan Peele. So needless to say, I was really rooting for a film to succeed. And I'm pleased to say it does. I think the comparisons to the likes of John Wick is understandable in terms of that series popularizing the one-man army genre.
Mm.
Although I always urge anyone who hasn't seen the Raid films, which preceded John Wick, to give them a watch. I was pleased to see Dev Patel cite the Raid films as an influence too. But where I felt Monkey Man set itself apart was in having a genuine emotionality and spirituality, as well as incorporating the class divisions and Hindu legends. While I don't think it always nails it, it is quite sloppy in places. Hats off to Patel for his ambition. I thought it was great fun, gleeful in its crunchy action, violent, grimy, stylish, and even with his obvious versatility, who would have had Dev Patel pegged as an action badass? Not me. Just on Monkey Man, which you're yet to see, are you? Right. We had a message from Emily, friend of the show, on Instagram, sharing this video where Dev Patel spoke about how difficult and how tooth and nail it was to make Monkey Man. Like, it was incredibly difficult production, went through COVID, they lost all their crew, to the point where they would literally do fight scenes where they would throw him on the table would break, they'd have to cut, glue individual pieces of the table back together, to then reset the shot and do it again. The production was incredibly threadbare, incredibly difficult, that when you hear about it, you're like, that is filmmaking.
Mm. Forged
under pressure, being incredibly resourceful. And to see the film that he's got out the other end, which, yes, in a few places might be a little bit misshapen, is otherwise very, very good and very, very functional.
Yeah.
It's just incredibly
proud. Having all the resources and money and team doesn't always produce.
No, absolutely not. Film. And I know that Dev Patel's next movie will be better for it, for having that forged experience than not.
Totally.
Anyway, Michael goes on to say, it reminded me of a conversation I had with some friends recently about our favourite films from actors turns directors, which stemmed from me watching Jodie Foster's Money Monster. I forgot Jodie Foster directed that movie.
Yeah,
George Clooney, Julia Roberts and Jack O'Connell. He says, Jack O'Connell is typically great, the film not so much. Absolutely falls apart. It does, that film.
You know what I thought about Jack O'Connell the other day? He would have been great casting for the Kingsman films.
Oh, yeah.
Because Taron Egerton's posh.
Yeah.
And he's meant to be playing a working class guy being introduced into the world of upper class espionage spy.
Yeah.
Whereas Jack O'Connell, it doesn't sound like Taron Egerton.
Yeah.
He actually would have been a better fit.
Actually has a genuine laddish swagger. That's
so good
true.
Shout.
Well done, James. That's
thank
very
you.
Good.
Thank you.
Now with Dev Patel very successfully joining the likes of Foster, Ben Affleck, Clint Eastwood, who are your guys' favourite actors turned director? Or what is your favourite film directed by someone who is perhaps more famous for acting? I always cite Paddy Considine's Tyrannosaur.
Yeah.
Danny DeVito's Matilda. Mm. There are some less inspiring examples. Do you remember when Ryan Gosling made Lost River? Yeah, he directed that movie with Matt Smith in it whilst Matt Smith was still
Doctor Who. Oh, yes. Yeah, blonde hair.
Yeah. Where's that now? George Clooney's Suburbicon, that was meant to be a disaster. Mm. And of course, Elizabeth Banks's Cocaine Bear. Well, Elizabeth Banks also directed like Pitch Perfect 2 and stuff, so fairly competent. What would be yours? Actors turned directors. Dev Patel's done a very good job.
Actors turned directors.
You know, Angelina Jolie didn't do too badly. I think she made a movie with Jack
O'Connell. With Jack O'Connell,
Unforgiven. Ben Affleck has done very well.
Ben Affleck is he gets a lot of stick Ben Affleck for being like that white guy, but he's actually really good. He's really passionate about film.
Greta Gerwig is an actor turned director.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah.
Ron Howard, Jon Favreau, Rob Reiner, Jordan Peele are all formerly actors.
Ben Stiller is doing really interesting stuff.
Ben Stiller, absolute. Olivia Wilde. I mean, I know some of the output not so great, but it's there. Kenneth Branagh, kind of out there.
John Krasinski.
That's a good.
I'd be interested to see what Krasinski does post Quiet Place.
That's my answer. He's doing an If this year. It looks like a terrible studio, imaginary friend.
Like a kid's film, a safe option.
Yeah. But I agree. I think that's a really great example of someone particularly stuck in the confines of not just being an actor, being a TV sitcom actor.
I think he loves films as well, doesn't he? Yeah,
it's clear.
He loves it.
Regina King was an actor. You know,
Greta Gerwig, technically.
Yeah, that's what I said. Robert Redford, famously actor, has done some really good accomplished work. George Clooney, as we've already mentioned. Clint Eastwood has done some solid work. I think Clint Eastwood's probably done as much solid work now as a director as he has an actor.
Yeah. Gran Torino, that's not a bad film.
I've never finished it. I've always thought the dialogue really terrible.
Yeah, it's a real sort of basic story.
Right.
But Clint Eastwood delivers the Clint Eastwood you want as like a hearty old, get the fuck off my lawn.
Yeah. Although he'll do, the old American Sniper, not so great. The Train to Paris one, that was not so great. Yeah. But Changeling, when I saw, was really quite good.
Changeling's a really, movie. Really under-discussed film, but really dark and really scary.
Good performance from Angelina Jolie.
Yes.
And Richard Jewell, his most recent film, I think, was great.
Yeah. Oh, Changeling, great shout.
Yeah,
I hope that film's still good. Really like dark when it comes to like the sentencing of death of people. Changeling. Not thought about the film in a long time.
It's a good movie. I've only seen it once, but I remember when I watched it. It was probably around the time I was getting into film, I was like 16.
That's 17. Like Gaslight the movie.
Yes. If people don't know the Changeling. Story, so Changeling is set in the 1920s based on a true story where Angelina Jolie plays a single mother with her son,
who's eight years old.
Yeah. And she obviously it's the 1920s, so it's the era where like kids run around the streets and they just come back home for dinner time, whatever. Anyway, one day her son does not come back and her child goes missing and a search is very, very sad. Anyway, sometime later, a couple of months, maybe a few weeks, I don't know. The authorities say, we found your son. She's very excited. And they bring her son. However, this is not her child.
No.
And in the initial shock and hysteria and emotion of it, she takes this child home with her.
And the child is saying that he's her son.
The
FBI is saying, this is your son.
Yeah. And she's looking at him like, but you're not. And there's a scene where she puts him up against the wall and looks at where the height was, where she last measured her son. And he's like shorter than her son was. And then there's this sort of fight against the authorities to prove that, first of all, this isn't her son.
Yeah.
Secondly, where did this boy come from? And meanwhile, there's a subplot about a child who's also a runaway that becomes very relevant to the plot that is incredibly dark and shocking. And there's actually a scene where Michael Kelly's in it. He hears the news and at first he's very dismissive and then Eastwood shows his cigarette just not being touched and just burning down to ash. Good movie.
And like the FBI have an incentive to solve the case quickly and gaslight her into saying this is your son. Really, really dark.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Changeling. Yeah. Thanks for your email, Michael. You have a third question there about best needle drops in movies, but we kind of talked about that last week in a previous email, but thank you for getting in touch.
George, should we play a game? A new game.
Well, before we do that, I just want to say thank you for your emails. And if you obviously, as ever, want to get in touch, you can do it by emailing hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. Sorry, James, you were saying.
A new game. Music, please. Okay, George, as always, Pop Kitchen ends...
with a game.
With a game. This is a new game. I've got you 9 or 10 rounds of this. Or not 10 rounds, it's like... piece of things in this one round of a game. So
why do we always struggle to sort of itemize?
Just tell you exactly how much you've got.
Yeah, we clearly are not numbers people. We are words.
Oh God, you should see me and George trying to just do very basic maths to like cost up the simplest thing. It's so bad. Got an A in maths. And then I
did too.
I really had to force myself. I'm so naturally bad at maths. Yeah.
But you learned the process. That's the key.
Yeah, but like I was occupying so much of my GPU to do maths.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
GPU.
No, like my computer processing
CPU.
Unit. Either.
What's the G? What's the G stand for?
Graphics processing.
Got
unit.
It. Right. Computer yes, I agree. Yeah, the RAM has been taken up.
CPU is like how many ones and zeros a computer can do. Yeah. GPU is like how many polygons and shapes and colors can
but
you render.
Either way, yes. Matt, same. Of all the revision I had to do, I'd say a good 40% was for maths.
Just to like get that. Anyway, this is not a maths game.
Just pause on that. You know, we talked about Book of Clarence last week. I got an A star in my RE, or as we called it at my school, B&V, beliefs and values, right?
That's great.
Yeah. So even now values, I always have to pause and go, oh, RE. But
it's not a religion,
that's the one where we have to use Bible quotes. And A, I made one up. So I just said, I just wrote it in sort of old English language, put some quotes around it, and said it was in Corinthians. Yeah. And then I got this in, I thought, I need another quote. Yeah. So I just used the Pulp Fiction one, which isn't an actual Bible quote. I used the Ezekiel 25:17.
I said it before, George.
That's really famous.
You're in the right occupation.
Yeah.
You're doing the right thing with your life.
Yeah,
so George, this is, George, sounds in movies, music, score, lines of dialogue. Sometimes they are immediately recognizable.
Oh, okay.
I have here 9
sound bites?
9 clips from films, right? These could be lines of dialogue, moments in the score, sound effects, but I'm only playing you 3 seconds of the film. And you have to tell me from only 3 seconds of hearing either score, sound, dialogue, thing, what film that 3 seconds is from. Because this is a new game, I'm going to give you a practice one. That's very easy, just so people at home can listen and play along, right? Do you understand the game?
Yes, you're going to play me 3 seconds from a clip and I have to tell you which film it's from.
Which film it's from. Okay. And it could be anything to do with sound.
Okay.
And obviously, if people are listening, I'll plug the sound right into the edit so you can play as well. This is an easy one, just so you know what the game is. So if I was to play this sound, you would tell me.
Phantom Menace.
That is Phantom Menace, right? Yeah. So obviously, lightsaber sounds.
Yeah.
Duel of the Fates.
Got it.
That is the Phantom Menace. Okay. So I'm starting easier, and I think these are going to get harder.
For ease of clarity, I'm going to let you play the full 3 seconds, and then I'm going to give you my answer.
So yeah, yeah. Wait until the end of the three. It's only 3 seconds, okay? Some of them are different to just sort of let the sound.
Okay.
Basically, you've got 3 seconds to figure it out. Okay. Are you ready for your first sound?
Yeah.
You have to guess the movie from this sound. Ready?
But I don't want to use my hand.
Toy Story 2 in the vents with Rex. Brilliant scene.
One of your favourite quotes to say.
I love
that.
I use it all the time. If I'm ever having a problem and I can't do it, I just go, but I don't want to use my head.
We're going to need to use your head.
Yeah.
But I don't want to use my head. Very good. You got that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Next sound. Are you ready?
Yeah. Matrix.
Yes, the very first moment of the Matrix. Yes. That's the sort of Warner Brothers logo spinning in.
Brilliant. I got chills. I'm getting goosebumps.
Isn't it great how iconic that sound is?
Yeah.
That just the digital graininess of the thing.
Do 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 do.
That sounds like Star Wars. Star.
No, sorry. It's all,
have you seen the Matrix?
There's a DJ
with the lightsabers, man. Yeah.
Sorry.
Are you ready for your next sound?
Yep.
Oh God. You. Dirty little liar.
One more time, please.
Oh, God. You dirty little liar.
Legally Blonde?
No. You've seen this film. You know this film.
Mean
you like
Girls.
This. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, got
that
it.
Is when Janice... It's the I Want My Pink Shirt Back scene.
Right.
When Janice and they confront her and she sees her at the party. It's like, you dirty little liar. And he's like, I want my pink shirt back.
Yes, that's Lizzie Kaplan's voice.
Yes.
Yeah, good. You know what's weird? Do you know what's so weird? Is that just on that clip, I could hear the era. I knew it was the early noughties. And it's just the sound of it. Intrinsically, I just knew it was from that era.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Ready for your next sound?
Yeah.
You'll get this one.
One more time, please.
Oh, George is stumped. I thought you'd have this.
Is that something that's alive making that sound? Or is it the sound of a gun? Or
I'll play it for you one more time.
Oh.
I'm going to give you a few more seconds to guess.
Oh, I'm really stumped.
So that is the sound of a velociraptor calling its friends. That is the kitchen scene in Jurassic Park.
Oh, very good.
So I think it's just opened the door to the kitchen and it's now calling its mates. That is the distinctive velociraptor sound. One more time.
That's brilliant because I know that scene. I wouldn't have got that. I heard someone being shot with a type of, you know, Star Wars gun.
Yes, like a pulsing thing. Yes. No, it's a distinctive velociraptor sound that they would have come up with.
Love it.
All right, next one. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes.
E.T.
Yes, that is E.T. That is the scene when Elliot shows E.T. to a very young Drew Barrymore and both of them scream.
I saw a Letterboxd review that really made me laugh. It said, E.T. is definitely gay because because when we first see him, he comes out the closet dressed in drag.
That's how he reveals himself. Yeah. You can hear, it would be impossible if it was just that scream, but when you hear E.T. scream, it gives away, so. Yeah. They're both just like screaming at each other.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, next sound. George, are you ready?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, baby. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is, of course, the ending of Before Sunset.
Yes.
Yeah,
I gave you an easy one there.
Yeah.
I saw I throw in 3 seconds of...
Your average man in the street wouldn't be able to get that. But
no,
I would.
No. Yeah. That's your favourite film.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, we reviewed the Before trilogy. You can check that out on our channel from over a year ago. All right, next sound.
Yeah.
Are you ready? You enjoying this?
Oh, I'm loving it.
Yeah.
Old film.
Yeah.
That sounds like Moon River.
I'm going to play it for you one more time. Listen to this sound. I mean, yeah. This is hard.
Okay, give me a second. Is it Godfather?
No.
Breakfast at Tiffany's?
No.
70s?
No.
80s?
No.
60s?
Yes.
One more time, please.
I'd love it if people at home have got this.
Okay, give me longer than 3 seconds just so we can get through this. Have I seen this film?
Yes. Yes.
From the 60s.
I'm pretty sure you've seen it. And if you haven't seen it, you know it.
That has the kind of... A Bond film.
Yes.
Doctor No?
No.
From Russia with Love?
No.
On the Majesty's Secret Service?
No. Listen to the sound.
Diamonds Are Forever.
No.
He's the man with the golden gun.
No.
What?
Goldfinger.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant.
Goldfinger.
Yeah, sorry.
So that is the sound of the laser.
Yes.
Going between Sean Connery.
Got it.
It's the no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Got it, right.
So the key is the laser sound.
I did mean Goldfinger.
And I could put that in because it's the Goldfinger.
Yes.
Just tune coming in
At
there.
At first, I heard Moon River.
Oh, very
it's
good.
Goldfinger.
It's hard.
That is hard.
But the clue is in the Goldfinger
but
theme
again,
that's there.
I knew it was old. I knew from the crackle of the audio it was like 70s, 60s. Yeah.
Great scene.
And
laser.
The strings. Oh,
yeah.
You expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. Next sound. Are you ready? You've got two more. These are getting harder.
Are you nervous?
What? Am I nervous? It's you who's in the hot seat.
On a live audience.
You've seen this film.
It's a film.
You know this film.
With canned laughter.
Are you ready?
One more time.
Play it one more time. Listen at home.
Are you nervous?
What? Am I nervous? It's you who's in the hot seat.
Thinking. He is thinking. Do you know this at home?
Is this from the noughties?
Yes.
Yeah, I could hear. Is that James McAvoy?
No.
Why am I nervous? It's you that's in the hot seat. Oh, God.
This film... Oh, I don't know how I should give you clues.
Comedy? No, it's drama. Sounds serious.
Drama. People I'm going to play it for you one more time for the people at home as well.
Are you nervous?
What? Am I nervous? It's you who's in the hot seat.
Think about that last line.
You who's in the hot, literal hot seat. Hot seat. Fire. Someone who's sitting long.
Okay, I'm going to tell you.
It's not like V for Vendetta?
No.
Oh, goodness.
Should I tell you?
Yeah.
It is from Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, yes!
Yes, of course it is.
So hot seat
the
millionaire.
Live audience. Yes. Oh.
So he's deep in sort of the last half an hour of the film.
Yes.
He's getting it right. And Dev Patel asks the host, like, are you nervous? And he's like, am I nervous? You're the one that's in the hot seat. And he sort of, you know, he sort of gets a little bit annoyed that Dev Patel's asked him if he's nervous.
Well,
play it one more time for you.
Are you nervous?
What? Am I nervous? It's you who's in the hot seat.
The hot seat is the clue.
What I heard was very strong British accent at the beginning. I thought James McAvoy. Then I heard a foreign voice speaking English, right? And I thought, that's why I thought Last King of Scotland, maybe.
Because it's not a bad shout.
A torturous scenario. Oh, brilliant. Good.
Okay, this is the last one. I think the hardest, but I can't place what you would and wouldn't remember. But nonetheless, iconic sound in cinema. This is the last one. Are you ready?
Again, please.
Yeah. So I got iconic music and iconic sounds.
I didn't get the music. One more time.
Play it one more time.
Oh, okay. So I'm getting slightly creepy. I'm getting twinkly clocks. Is this?
This is the hardest one, I think.
It's sinister, but is it also kids? Is it younger? This is aimed at a younger audience.
Kind of, yeah.
From the last 10 years?
No.
20 years.
I'll check which year it came out because I'm not sure.
Oh.
Oh, go on.
It's not Home Alone.
No. Okay. It's from the 1980s. Play a few one more time just in case that jogs your
memory. Labyrinth.
No.
Halloween?
Nope.
But you sorry, targeted younger audience.
Kind of, yeah, but it's universal.
It's not E.T. It's not never.
Kids would
story.
Like it, but it's not a kids' film, I'd say.
Oh God. From the '80s. It's not a teen film. It's got to be slightly more sinister. Not Nightmare on Elm Street. No.
It's not a sinister film.
Oh, sorry.
It's an intimidating scene. A magical scene.
Is it a Tim Burton movie?
No.
Oh, God. It's not Beetlejuice. Oh, this is hard. Have I seen this movie?
I'm pretty sure you have. I'd be surprised if you haven't. I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, go on.
It is in the film starring Tom Hanks in a film called Big.
Ah.
Well, that is the moment when he goes to the Zoltar machine.
Oh, of course.
And the red eyes and the mouth and the sounds you're hearing are the mechanical sounds of that machine bringing the wish. Yeah, that's hard. But that I'll drag out the clip so you can hear the sound. So you can hear the rotating of the coin. This is now the extended version.
That's hard. I heard
my wish.
This is now just the scene.
Yeah. I heard at first the cable car, the mining cars from Temple of Doom.
And
I was like, that's a much fast paced scene. Yes. Someone would know that.
Yeah.
I then thought
it's a sort of
I actually thought the first Mission Impossible when all the people are getting killed at the beginning.
I think the bells in there sound like a funfair.
Yes. But it's because it's such an untypical sinister moment in a fairly unsinister movie.
And quite a cool scene where there's like away from the fair, there's this solitary machine alone, surrounded by nothing. But yeah, that was the game.
I liked that very much.
How close do you really listen game? 3 seconds of audio. But then amazing that within 3 seconds you can place a film.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very hard, but also I like that. I like that. It really gets the senses tingling.
It takes a while to prep, but I think it's quite fun, and we had quite fun in conversations about the films.
I really hope you guys enjoyed that at home. That was really
Interesting. Be great for the audio listeners. So that was all she wrote for the game. But as always, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Pulp Kitchen. Don't forget, we post new episodes of this show every single Wednesday.
Thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate it. If you're a new listener, if you're a regular listener, we love having you. This was episode 125. Please continue to follow us on Instagram and TikTok, and share and like and rate everything we do on there. We post things that don't always relate to this. We're posting clips from junkets that don't make it onto the show on the socials. We're posting film bites on there. Mm-hmm. We're asking questions like for today's episode on our stories. We are getting little highlights from our lives, events we go to. It's a great place to follow us. Tell your friends.
We're just the best.
We're out there.
Building a little community of film lovers.
No one can say that we are not on the, you know, metaphorical pavement with the sandwich board that is Pulp Kitchen, spinning it around.
That's the joke.
Sandwich board over us, or the golf sale sign saying Pulp
Everything
Kitchen
must go.
Everything must go.
Yeah.
If we needed to, I would do the inflatable, you know, car wash things with Pulp Kitchen.
We'd do that.
Anyway, thank you for joining us, guys. I hope you have a great week. And
I hope you enjoy the return of the editorial feature.
If you guys really enjoyed this episode, as for a change, from a break from
just
the reviews,
two reviews,
we'll do more of them, absolutely. Yeah. But obviously, we always want to talk about recent films and new films.
We want to keep the conversation fresh. Absolutely. We want to hear what you guys have to say. Obviously, if you're seeing the films, keep sending in your thoughts, and we'll read them out on the show. We always want to know what you guys think of the films that are out.
But thank you so much.
Have a great week.
See you next week.
Bye, guys.